This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by NK Seeds. NK Corn and Soybeans offer growers unique choice and greater value, helping to deliver maximum whole farm ROI potential. Yes, there have been some important trade announcements over the past 2 weeks, but there's a lot more work to do. Does the Trump trade team have the same sense of urgency that many feel to get more done?
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good morning and thank you for joining AgriTalk again today. We are at an important point in the life and times of the Trump trade team. The team has a couple of wins, good wins, under their belt. Will trade negotiators take a break, or will they keep working to build the momentum? It certainly feels like we're at a potential turning point. I, for one, strongly encourage the Trump trade team to keep grinding, build the momentum on trade issues. I'll admit, I was starting to show some frustration a couple of weeks ago, even questioned whether the great negotiator could be a great closer or not. And now that the Trump administration has closed a couple of deals, I'm impressed and I want more, and I'm sure you do too. That will be the underlying theme of today's AgriTalk. We'll start with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. I talked with the secretary yesterday and I think he's optimistic we will see the momentum on these trade issues build. And joining me at the bottom of the hour is Secretary Tom Vilsack. Vilsack is the president and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. He's obviously got a lot at stake in these trade agreements. And at the end of the show today, I had a conversation with Senator Heidi Heitkamp late yesterday afternoon. USMCA and the Farm Bill are two very hot button issues for her state of North Dakota. And believe me, she's got some strong opinions on what's really holding up the Farm Bill in the conference committee. So we've got a lot to talk about on today's show. Right now, let's turn it over to Tyne Morgan for an update on the news. Tyne, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Chip?
Good.
Just want to remind our listeners, we'll be at Iowa State next week for our next edition of our College Roadshow.
Yes, absolutely. Going to be back on campus down in Ames, Iowa State University, the Cyclones.
Going to Chip's stomping grounds, going to see if there's a statue anywhere or, you know, your name carved in any bathroom stall. Yeah. I'm going to check that out.
Oh, I always said,
Chip, you can't trust an establishment unless there are names and phone numbers written on the bathroom stall. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's probably their someplace. I don't know. But that was, you know, only 31 years ago?
Still have the same number?
I'm still hoping that they'll let me back in.
We'll see about that.
Right.
But we'll be right in the middle of campus on Friday for AgriTalk and U.S. Farm Report. So if you're in the area, maybe if rain's keeping you out of the field, join us. We'd love to have a good audience at Iowa
State.
Because believe me, Mizzou brought it. Texas Tech brought it. We've got to see if Iowa State can bring it, too.
You bet. You bet. There's a great group of kids down there that are involved in, students. A great group of students down there that are involved in the ag marketing and management organization. It's called AMMO. And hopefully we'll get a bunch of those AMMO kids out, the ag biz kids. Should be a lot of fun down in Ames.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you get old. You start calling students kids, just so you know.
Yeah,
but you know, we'll just fly right past that.
I caught myself.
You did. I wouldn't have brought it up if you wouldn't have caught yourself. Anyway, speaking of catching yourself, lots of news today. A major beef processor is facing a big recall, Chip, to the tune of 6.5 million pounds. It's a salmonella outbreak of beef products stemming from beef produced at a JBS USA Arizona plant. The beef products, including ground beef, those dates range from July 26th to September 7th. Now, USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service issued the recall. The products have the established number 267 inside the mark of inspection. The outbreak leading to 57 cases so far in 16 states. Well, reactions are still rolling in on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. The latest export numbers this morning revealing Mexico is stepping up to the plate to buy U.S. grain in a big way. Mexico made the biggest one-day buy of soybeans in nearly two decades last week, those sales coming despite USMCA still needing to be signed. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue weighing in on the deal this week.
Yeah, I think the farmers are excited about it. They're glad to see the new USMCA deal put back together. We've got a great North American neighborhood here with Canada, Mexico, who are, have always been in our top three trading partners. So it means better access, more unfettered access for dairy, for poultry, for eggs into Canada, but also have access into Mexico, which is already a good customer.
Also on the USMCA front, Chip, something kind of interesting. The new trade pact clause puts pressure on China. So a new provision says that if one of the countries enters a free trade deal with a non-market country, such as China, then the others can scrap USMCA in 6 months and start a bilateral pact. The clause also says the three countries must notify the others before entering into trade negotiations with other countries, which is interesting to note. But also on China, Chip, first it was African swine fever, now it's avian influenza hitting the livestock industry there. China's Ministry of Agriculture has culled more than 21,000 birds. That's after tests found H5N6 highly pathogenic avian influenza was found in a small village in the southwest part of the country. The ministry says this was the first occurrence of the strain in more than 2 years. But it's interesting, as these outbreaks occur, how long can they withstand not trading with key partners like the U.S.? I mean, you know, it puts the pressure on. So I know that's something analysts have been talking about. But I thought that that segment of the trade pact was pretty interesting.
Since
it kind of blocks Canada and Mexico of entering into a bilateral pact with China.
Well, and it ties the three countries together.
Correct. Creates those allies.
Exactly. You know, we've been looking for the for some kind of a trade block that we can go to China with and say, listen, if you're not going to agree to do things right going forward, look at everything that you that you are risking here. So,
yep.
All right. Thank you very much, Tyne.
Bye, Chip.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Greg, how are you today?
Good morning, Chip. I'm very well, thank you.
All right. So we've got a lot of prime beef that's being produced right now, don't we?
Absolutely. You know, Chip, 12 years ago, the beef industry was producing about 12 billion pounds of choice and prime. Today, we're producing 18 billion pounds per year. That's a 50% increase. And with that, of course, is the increase in prime. And we're seeing a rapid increase in prime over the last couple of years. In fact, through the first 9 months of year this year, the increase in prime is up 36%. That's great for people like you and I like to eat a lot of prime, right? Okay.
You bet.
So that has caused a price decline relative to choice. In other words, the price of prime has come down, and choice, that gap has narrowed. That's good for people that are in the restaurant business who may be offering choice products, now have an opportunity to move up to prime. So overall, we think that's good for the beef industry, especially people who like to eat out. Those prices down a little bit. We got a lot of beef out there, Chip, and as you know, anything like this that can help us move more of that product is good for the industry overall.
Absolutely. But for the feed yard, it's a bit of a balancing act because it takes more feed to get to that prime, and you got to make the decision, is the premium on prime beef worth the extra feed, right?
Yes, to some extent. But what we've seen over the last dozen years is the improvement in genetics. Has improved that feed efficiency. So
beautiful.
Overall, yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, the genetics are helping us put a more desirable piece of meat on the plate for the consumers out there. It's good stuff, Greg. Good stuff. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, we are going to have a conversation with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue right here on AgriTalk.
When a vital micronutrient is up against great deficiency, the impact could be very major. But there is hope on the horizon.
Listen, Jim, we need a better boron delivery system.
Hope for a hero to boldly deliver nutritional balance to soybean fields everywhere.
The right nutrients can make or break us, Jim.
From the Mosaic Company, the maker of Micro Essentials and K-Meg, a groundbreaking story featuring an all-star cast. Potassium in its most powerful performance to date, along with boron and also boron. And if its role in two different forms isn't bold enough, just wait till you see the delivery.
Jim, the key to growth is in potassium plus two forms of boron.
this season and all season. Get ready for maximized yields from Aspire's Growing Beyond the Outer Limits. Now available in retailers. We will not spoil the ending, but your retailer or AspireBoron.com will.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
We're talking to Joe Bowman, corn product manager for NK. NK has proven performance in innovative new products, but how else is NK helping to increase ROI potential? So how is NK serving farmers' needs beyond the genetics in the bag?
Yeah, so we really innovate with purpose. You know, we seek different solutions to help the growers and the challenges that they may have. And a couple of different examples of this is first in the traits that we're bringing into marketplace, whether it's insect traits such as Agrisure Duracade for corn rootworm control, or Agrisure Viptera for above ground pest control, such as corn earworm, western bean cutworm. And on top of that, we've been innovative with other technologies such as Enogen, which increases the efficiency in an ethanol plant, as well as improves the digestibility in beef and dairy cattle to help a return on investment, whether you're an ethanol plant, or a beef cow or a dairy cow. So, Syngenta and NK, we've continued for a long number of years to, you know, find unique ways to help bring new money onto the growers' farms and like I said earlier, help improve their return on their investment.
Yeah, that return. You put a dollar in, you want more than a dollar back. There's no question about that. That was Joe Bowman, corn product manager for NK. To learn more, visit nkcorn.com.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Let's jump right into it and welcome USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue to the show. Mr. Secretary, welcome to AgriTalk. Thanks for making the time.
Chip, I'm glad to be able to visit with you and your listeners again today.
Very good. Very good. Secretary Perdue, let's talk trade agreements because it feels like we've got some positive momentum, and USMCA is a great example of that momentum. What got us to the end zone with Canada?
Well, I think I like the way you describe it, Chip, with momentum, because yeah. I don't think we all knew we're not going to put all this back together at one time, but we do have the dominoes falling in place with Chorus and then Mexico, Canada coming along at the last minute. I think this agreement's always been extremely important to Canada, and people in this business work on deadlines, and it was really deadlines that got this done. Obviously, you're aware that the dairy industry was a real dairy issue, was a real stickler for Canada. They held out. To his credit, Ambassador Lighthizer, the instruction of President Trump, held strong, and we got a deal better than TPP and better, much more access than we had under the current NAFTA.
Yeah, and it seems like this agreement is very important to the dairy industry, but it's important for all of U.S. ag, right?
It's all for that. That's a point that's not well understood right now. It's good for all of ag, mostly from renewing the access. We've locked in those markets, and Canada and Mexico are in our top three year by year. So these are very important markets to our overall ag industry. We talk a lot about dairy, egg, poultry access, and the wheat grading, but actually it's very, very encouraging for all of agriculture.
Yeah, and I think it is important that that we maintain a trilateral agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada on this instead of having two separate bilateral agreements.
Well, we felt the same way, and I know that that's what we were hoping for. Canada, frankly, had been fairly intransigent, and they're the ones that kind of, you know, held out until the very end, and it was very frustrating from time to time, but we were ready to do a deal similar to what we got at the end, and Canada just kind of drug along. But I'm glad it all got together, a trilateral, I call the North America the best neighborhood on earth, and there's no reason we shouldn't be trading with our allies to the north and the south.
Absolutely. Okay, there's been a lot of support for the deal from the commodity groups out there, but there's some voices out there in the ag community that think this agreement comes up a little bit short. What are your concerns with the agreement?
Well, we would always like to got more. That's just the American spirit. We want the best and we want the most. But the fact is, compared to where we were, this fulfilled President Trump's promise that he was going to improve and renew the NAFTA agreement, and he's done that with USMCA. We have to realize that our U.S. economy is more than just agriculture, although I believe agriculture is the bedrock, but it does a lot of things. And phytosanitary rules of engagement between the three countries, it does a lot with, for the first time, having a biotechnology text in the language. This agreement is very modern. It sets a template for other agreements that we think will be the template going forward over how we do deals with the EU as well as China.
Okay, yeah, and we've got that momentum going that I think we agree that we've got going here, and now Japan wants to come to the negotiating table. It sounds like India wants to have some trade talks as well. Japan specifically, Mr. Secretary, what should be the goals for the U.S. with a trade agreement with Japan?
Well, huge market, obviously, in beef and pork. Japan is typically in our top five and great customers. And we would love to get these tariffs back to where these other competitors have them in the TPP group. We're looking for TPP plus with Japan. Agricultural issues in Japan is a very touchy situation, but I believe President Abe and President Trump can get this done. I think, interestingly, while many have voiced some concerns over President Trump's negotiating strategy, I think the USMCA demonstrated its effectiveness in bringing people to talk about some things that may have been uncomfortable to talk about in the past, and the U.S. has just let slide.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And then with India, boy, that would be such a great market for us to tap into. Sitting here in the middle of ethanol country, Mr. Secretary, that India ethanol market looks like it's got some huge potential for us.
A lot of potential in not just ethanol, but food and commodity production as well. India has been essentially a closed market. Undersecretary Ted McKinney, our foreign trade undersecretary, has been over there a couple of times. We feel like we're making progress. I think they realize that growing population they have over there, they're not going to be able to feed it indigenously, but just production there. And we think they are ready to join the world trade environment the way China did a number of years ago. And it could be a huge customer in the past for in the future for us. And that's really what we're looking at. We don't want to be totally dependent on China. It was really to our shame, I think, that we let ourselves become so dependent on the China market.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very good. You said that the deadline got the deal done here, but when it comes to the farm bill, the deadline didn't get that deal done. It's pretty disappointing there. What programs inside of your department are left vulnerable by the expiration of the 2014 bill?
Well, Chip, we're all disappointed we didn't get it done. I think Chairman Conaway, Chairman Roberts tried really hard, but they just couldn't bridge the differences in the reconciliation. But the good news is, from a USDA perspective, from a farmer, from a just a dirt farmer out there, there's not going to be a whole lot of change. It's just going to go on the way it has been with the continuation, certainly till the end of the year. They'll have to do something by the end of the year. That may be the real deadline that we're looking at, and we hope that we can get a renewed farm bill, a modernized farm bill that We think they're on the right track of tweaking the things. It was going to be more evolutionary than revolutionary, but they were on the right track in many ways, and I think we can hopefully come together on the integrity of the food stamp program as well.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Out here in Iowa, there's a lot of buzz that President Trump, when he comes out here next week, that he's going to be confirming the move on year-round availability of E15. Is it hype or is it going to happen?
Well, I'm one of those that's buzzing as well, hoping that it happens. Obviously, I'm in no position to preempt the president's announcement. That's his announcement, and but we are hopeful that based on what he has told me and others, that it's I said a couple of weeks ago, it's imminent. I just can't define what the definition of imminent. So, but I know it's something he's wanted to do in his heart for a while, and it appears that any kind of trip to Iowa would be a great opportunity to announce those things. Although I'm not at liberty. Don't know, frankly, if that's on his mind or not. But I sure hope it is.
Okay. Now, with this agreement, you know, quote unquote, if there is an agreement, and if the announcement is coming, we're also hearing that there's going to be some changes to the way that the renewable identification numbers are traded. Specifically, who can trade in that market? Is there anything to that?
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think that's been a point of agreement for a long time now, needing transparency in the RINs market. It's been manipulated in an unfair way by some people in the market, and the transparency has been virtually non-existent. We would never think of the corn or bean market or any other stock market operating in such an opaque way as the RIN markets have operated. So I think the whole market will benefit from the transparency improvements that will be made and announced, and I think that it will help overall. It will give people the confidence, those on both sides of the ledger, whether users or consumers or manufacturers or producers of RINs. It will give all those segments the ability to know where, when, and how things are working.
Okay, very good. We've only got about 30 seconds left here, Mr. Secretary, but I'm curious, what's at the top of your priority list right now?
Well, again, I think we want to continue the momentum as you've described. We need to get these retaliatory tariffs off so our farmers can go about producing as they have been. We got good crops in the fields in many places. I hear of some really stellar yields in Iowa. I just talked to a young lady this morning whose family farms out there. I think they were averaging 264 bushels of corn. We've got to get bean demand back up. We're getting some backlog there with no export demand. So we want to keep trading.
Very good. Very good. Mr. Secretary, again, thank you for making time for us today. We sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip. Good to talk with you always.
All right. That is USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. Coming up next, we've got former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack right here on AgriTalk.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is.
Oh, Ed, look, it's Credenz Liberty Link GT27.
I know, Adna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us. Brian, export sales report this morning really showed some impressive tallies for corn and soybeans.
Yeah, the soybean number over 1.5 million metric tons, corn over 1.4 million metric tons. So we continue to see that the foreign buyers responded to the sharp drop in prices. And a particular note is Mexico on the soybean side of things. They took almost half of that export tonnage. Or sales tonnage that we saw for the weekend at September 27th. So while China, the main buyer of U.S. soybeans historically, is still missing, Mexico, which is a very key market, number two if you do individual countries, number three if you include the EU as one country, is a major buyer right now. And as a result, we're seeing the soybean market 5 to 6 cents higher. Corn is up about 2 cents in most contracts.
Yeah, it's nice after that little bit of a setback at midweek yesterday. It's good to see some buying interest come back into the trade.
Definitely. And, you know, that it's kind of been one of those situations where we knew that we needed the export demand to show up. Here it is now as we get into harvest season and the harvest delays because of the rains. Yeah. And then the export demand are giving funds reasons to cover short positions in both those markets.
Hey, what's the deal with the pressure on back month hogs this week?
Well, they ran up very aggressively. I think it's mostly a corrective pullback at this point in time. We're looking at more than a $12 discount now for the December contract to the cash index. It feels a little heavy at this point in time. We'll see if buyer interest shores up underneath the market here.
Very good. We've got a little bit of pressure on the cattle trade this morning as well. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. Any questions?
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Secretary Tom Vilsack, CEO and President of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, joins us now. Mr. Secretary, it's good to talk with you again.
Chip, it's great to be with you and your listeners.
Very good. Boy, there's a lot of moving parts in the trade world right now, isn't there?
You think? Absolutely. Absolutely. Obviously, good news with Mexico and Canada certainly, I think, reassures all of us that we're not going to be pulling out of these two countries. We're going to have a trilateral agreement, and that should stabilize and strengthen the market over time.
Very good. Yeah. Let's get straight to the bottom line on USMCA, if you can bottom line. And how good of a deal is it for the U.S. dairy industry?
Well, first of all, good news that we have an agreement because it will now free up the folks who've been negotiating on this agreement to focus on getting those retaliatory tariffs lifted, which good still point. Are a bit of a burden. Also, perhaps enable us to sort of refocus our attention on China and bilateral trade discussions with Japan, UK, and the EU. So from that perspective, obviously a lot of positives. Very happy to see that the Mexican market continues to be preserved for dairy. It's our number one market, again, subject to the retaliatory tariffs being lifted. Good news in terms of new market access in Canada. The reality is, I think the expectations were that the market access would be a little bit greater than it was, but it's certainly better than TPP. And we're going to have to basically see how this all gets implemented in order to determine precisely how significant it is.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned Mexico, Secretary Vilsack, because it is such an important market for U.S. dairy product. Let's get into a few more specifics on that. Just how important is it?
Well, it's our number one market. Roughly 30 to 35% of our exports go to Mexico. 75 to 80% of their imports come from the U.S.
Right.
So it's a market that we depend on and that we need. And there was obviously uncertainty about whether or not we would continue to have that position. Once the retaliatory tariffs are lifted, well, we're back in business fully and completely under this agreement, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you said also that the access that we are gaining under USMCA is better than what we would have had under the TPP. How much better is it?
Well, it's better because we don't have to share it with other nations. Percentages are not that much different, but we don't have to share it with other nations. But here's the thing, Chip. We don't really know precisely how this is going to work because that quota is basically spread over a number of products. And depending upon the demand for those products, it may or may not be significant. And that's why we're just going to have a wait-and-see attitude. The same thing is true with the elimination of Class 7. That was obviously good news. It's something the dairy industry requested the administration to focus on. But in place of Class 7, we now have a new pricing system that provides for the use of an applicable Canadian allowance. We're not quite sure precisely what that means, whether or not that can be something that can be changed from year to year and time to time. If so, it could potentially create mischief in the future, but we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. This agreement, It includes something that basically binds the three countries together on future trade talks. Can't start new talks without informing the other two countries. What do you make of that part of the agreement?
Well, the beauty of that agreement is it's a very specific signal to China that yeah. North America is going to be united in its approach to non-market economies, of which China is probably the number one directive here. I think China is probably going to try to contend in WTO that they are now a market economy and don't fall within that provision. But I think our position, I think the U.S. position, is that it clearly is a non-market country, and I think that it specifically was designed to send a message to China that the administration is going to begin to develop the kind of coalition that I think they need and probably should have had at the beginning of all this in order to be most effective against the Chinese.
Okay, and that China market, the last time that we talked, Secretary Vilsack, we were talking about the development of the Asian market for dairy products, not just U.S. dairy products, but dairy products in general. It's becoming a very pivotal market out there for the dairy industry because of their growing acceptance of dairy products, right?
Right. It's one of the reasons why for the first 6-7 months of this year, we've had record exports of U.S. dairy. And primarily it's to Southeast Asia, to the Middle East and North Africa. And this is where we're going to focus our attention now that the momentum in the Chinese market has been stalled as a result of the tariffs. We have to look for other alternative market opportunities. And there are many. In addition to Southeast Asia and the Middle East and North Africa, we also have opportunities in Central America and South America and the Caribbean islands. So we're going to continue to be aggressive in our efforts to sell the best dairy products that are produced in the most sustainable way around the world.
Very cool. Okay, Mr. Secretary, you're in such a unique position to evaluate a trade agreement like this. Look wider than the dairy industry. How good of a deal is the USMCA for all of U.S. agriculture?
Well, again, I think it preserves markets that are incredibly important to all of our producers and sends a message that that this administration can conclude a deal that is beneficial. I think the real challenge is what we're going to do with China. And I think at the end of the day, U.S. agriculture placed a fairly heavy bet on China. And until that is resolved, I think there's going to continue to be uncertainty and continue to be a little bit of anguish out there in the countryside in terms of what the trade policy is. If we can get China to change its way of doing business, if we can get it in a position where it provides a fair trading relationship, that's obviously going to be beneficial. But if this thing lags on, I know in the dairy industry, we've determined that if this were to lag on for years, we could lose as much as $12 billion of opportunity just in that market alone. And that's just dairy.
That can't happen.
That's not soybeans. That's not pork. And, you know, the damages are pretty significant. The losses could be great. You know, fortunately for dairy, there are alternative markets. I don't think that's necessarily always the case for soybeans. I mean, we had such a large amount of soybeans sold in China that it's pretty hard to imagine that the rest of the world can absorb that without a lot of work and a lot of effort. So you know, this is a very unusual and very difficult time for agriculture, and it comes at a time when farm incomes are down and where there's already stress out there in the countryside.
Yeah, now Secretary Perdue just told us that he thinks that they found the right template for future trade agreements, Japan, potentially India, China, even the EU. Do you think he's right on that?
Well, you know, Japan's immediate reaction to discussion of reopening trade talks with the U.S. was not to include agriculture in those discussions. So I think there's still some work to do with the Japanese. I think they would prefer still that we rejoin TPP. In terms of India, I tell you, that's a very tough market to discuss agriculture in. We've not had much success over the course of a number of years. The EU is an opportunity, but until they figure out precisely what they're doing with the UK and how that split up is going to take place and what do they do about GMOs and some of the issues that have been sticky for quite some time, agriculture may be very difficult in those conversations as well. But I think it's important for the administration to aggressively pursue bilateral discussions. It's something that we've been asking them to do for some time, and it appears now that they may have the time and the capacity to do it.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about what is going on at the U.S. Dairy Export Council. What are you doing to we talked about building those Asian markets, but what are you doing at U.S. Dairy Export Council to help keep this momentum going?
Well, we set a goal to increase exports as a percentage of production from 15% to 20% in the next 3 to 5 years. And we've decided that the strategy is to increase our presence, to deepen our presence in these markets. That means we are hiring more people who are working full-time to promote U.S. dairy in these emerging markets. It means more partnerships with universities so we can showcase the functionality and the versatility of U.S. dairy products. And it requires more promotion. Now, promotions like the one we have with Costco in Korea, Japan, and China, where we are essentially using their market opportunities to showcase American cheese. Promotions with food manufacturers and with chain restaurants in order to showcase ingredients and American dairy products. So deepening our presence in all of these key markets, increasing partnerships and doing a lot more promotion seems to be having an impact because we have seen increases in exports and we have seen, as I said earlier, we're on a pace to have a record year in exports.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And didn't you recently meet with Cuban officials?
I had the chance and the privilege of meeting with the president from Cuba with a number of other ag leaders. It would include a number of secretaries of agriculture from various states, and a number of the commodities were represented as well. You know, we really think that there's a terrific opportunity for an agricultural trade relationship with Cuba. They clearly need product. They have to import about 80% of the food that they need to feed their people, and the U.S. is in a great position logistically to satisfy this. We just need to break down some of the barriers that have existed for far too long. And maintaining that relationship, continuing those conversations, is important to building that relationship so when those barriers come down fully and completely, we're in the best position to take full advantage of it.
Yeah, one of the things that we miss in the dairy export potential is fluid milk, and it seems like Cuba would be a logical market for us to pursue the fluid milk market.
It is, because obviously you don't have the safety concerns and the transportation logistical concerns that you have if you're trying to do fluid milk in other locations unless it's extended shelf life milk. So obviously that, and they're tremendous consumers of cheese. They are very interested in the pharmaceutical industry is big down in Cuba, and you would be surprised, but a lot of the filler in pills and so forth is actually dairy based. So a lot of different ways to look at opportunity. You know, I was in Korea recently and found out that they are very interested in pet food that is specifically designed for the individual pet. So they have milk that's designed for cats, milk that's designed for dogs. You know, there's an opportunity there as well. The health and
very good
craze that's taking place. All of this represents great opportunity for dairy.
Very good. Secretary Vilsack, thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Take care.
All right. That's Secretary Tom Vilsack, CEO and President of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. We've got Senator Heidi Heitkamp up next.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small, your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural. You must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Welcome to No Man's Land, a new podcast from U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan.
Bacon is the gateway for a lot of people who are vegetarian.
That has to sink into our listeners. Bacon is the gateway meat.
I invite you to join me each week as I shine a spotlight on powerful women in agriculture while empowering all women in agriculture, going where no man has gone before.
No Man's Land with Tyne Morgan is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Go behind the scenes of Ag Day and get straight talk on the issues pushing agriculture. Introducing Farm Sense, a new podcast from Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths.
Join me each week as I go beyond the headlines and get personal. My goal is to take a common sense approach to tackling real life problems. Perspective rooted in my rural upbringing and featuring some of the best minds agriculture has to offer.
Farm Sense with Clinton Griffiths is available where you access your favorite podcast, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Back pain doesn't take vacations. It never celebrates holidays. It's on the job 24/7 to keep your life exactly where it is, in limbo. But it doesn't have to be that way, because Laser Spine Institute can help you take back your life from chronic neck and back pain. With a less than 1-inch incision, our minimally invasive procedures have provided relief to over 60,000 patients with a 97% patient satisfaction rate. So get ready to stand tall and live the life you've imagined for yourself without pain. Are you or a loved one suffering from a bulging disc, herniated disc, spinal stenosis, pinched nerve, or degenerative disc disease? Call our spine care consultants now at
855-498-BACK.
For a no-cost MRI review and to learn more, it's time to say goodbye to chronic neck and back pain.
Call 855-498-BACK to see if laser spine surgery is right for you. That's 855-498-BACK.
What have you got to lose? Laser Spine Institute, the leader in minimally invasive spine surgery.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
You're listening. Your neighbors are listening. The world is listening. We're talking ag. We're AgriTalk. It's what we do.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We have got Senator Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota on the line with us. Senator, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. How are things going out there in D.C.?
Well, it's great. I wish we had a farm bill. I wish we had my soybean trade with China. I wish that we had better farm prices. But other than that, you know, it's going pretty well.
Yeah, you ran right down the list of things that I want to talk about today. So the deadline passed on the farm bill here. What's your take, Senator? What got in the way?
I think Title I got in the way. At the end of the day, you know, in negotiating, I think everybody kind of thought this was going to be all about nutrition. But I think at the end of the day, some of the Great Plains states, North Dakota included, really bulked at losing base acres to support cotton growers in West Texas. And so, you know, I think there was a little bit of the bait and switch, you know, that the big problem was nutrition and pay no attention to what's happening in Title I. And you know, basically what we said is, look, we did a pretty good deal for cotton before. We think that that's consistent with what we said. And we aren't going to transfer money out of the Great Plains and send it to West Texas. Just not going to do it.
So get a little more specific on that for us, Senator. Basically, what you're talking about is if you haven't produced one of the program crops for a certain number of years, those base acres would be lost?
Right. And so basically it would free up some resources. Those resources then would go to other programs the House bill moved those acres, moved that money from that acreage into West Texas for cotton. And we're saying, look, we don't know what we're going to need in terms of our overall farm program, but we're not going to give up those acres that are in the bank right now to support cotton in the South. We've already done a great deal for cotton.
Okay. So, and then I know that there's also some concern on the conservation title as well, right?
Yep. I think, you know, I have some concerns about the Senate bill on conservation, whether it's permanent easements or, you know, we've been fighting Swamp Buster for a lot of years and taking a look at flexibility. I think on CRP, there's a lot of discussion about how that program should be administered. But I think those are all, I mean, we were pretty close to getting a deal on the permanent easements, which are a problem for North Dakota. We were pretty close to getting the conservation title across the finish line. The important thing is trying to decide how much money we're going to spend. Now, the EQIP program is incredibly popular in North Dakota. Yeah. And, you know, when we look at beginning farmer, beginning rancher programs, and the fact that if you use EQIP, what my farmers are finding, my ranchers are finding, is that you can basically have greater production over a smaller plot of land. And so the EQIP program is pretty important to me that get funded. And so a lot of those programs, I think, are undervalued in the House bill. I think we need to have adjustments. But CRP and EQIP and a number of the conservation programs are also, I think, having a difficult time, you know, kind of getting to compromise. But I don't think it's the biggest hurdle in the farm bill negotiation.
Okay. So what's it going to take to get it done?
I think what it's going to take is everybody understanding that you can't always have your way and that you have to put aside some of your parochial interests to get it done. You know, I think what I like to remind people is the Senate bill got, you know, over 80 votes, the largest bipartisan Senate bill in the history of farm bills since the first one, and that it was a pretty good model. Did it need adjustment? You bet. But taking that and saying we insist on a bill that barely got through the House as the model, and we're not willing to compromise off that, is not very smart negotiating strategy. You know, you compare it to a farm bill that basically got broad bipartisan support. And so, you know, I think there's got to be a willingness to compromise. And it's interesting because I think, you know, you can make a judgment on who's going to have more leverage after the midterms. But I don't think in the House, a lot of people think that's necessarily going to be the current chairman.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. Okay. We got the trade deal with Canada and Mexico done. It's still going to have to be ratified, of course, by Congress, but that's got to be encouraging.
It is. One of the things that we've been fighting about for a long time is grain grading. up in Canada. It's a remnant of the wheat board, and so we've basically been saying when we take our grain up there, we don't expect it to all be feed quality. It's not. And so we've been pushing them. There's a provision saying they have to treat it equitably. I think our grain growers are a little concerned that what does that mean? It's not spelled out very clearly, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. We had asked for flexibility on country of origin labeling. We've asked for attention to potato dumping, red potato dumping. So we didn't get those two issues addressed, which were on the kind of wish list. I think when you look at the Canadian deal, other than dairy and the grain grading, I think this really wasn't about agriculture. The renegotiation of NAFTA has been much more about automobiles.
Right. Very good. But we are making some progress there, and we do have some momentum behind some of the trade issues.
I do want to point this out.
Yeah.
I would have been ecstatic if what this meant is that they were going to lift the tariffs on steel and aluminum. I think it's really important that we kind of take a step back and say, where in the whole scheme of things is this the single most important thing that could happen for our farmers today? And I think the answer is no.
Your name is popping up a lot in the news right now, Senator. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you how you're going to vote on the Kavanaugh nomination process, but what role will this extended investigation play in your decision on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh?
Well, it definitely extended the time period for making a decision. I'm the former attorney general. We didn't have direct line responsibility on most cases in terms of prosecution in North Dakota. But many times if the state's attorneys couldn't prosecute because of conflict or there was a second look, my office did that. And I ran something called the Bureau of Criminal Investigation. We did actual investigations and then made a decision. I would never, ever have made a discharging decision without a completed investigation, without a completed record. And that's the attitude that I bring into this. Let's complete the record, then let's make a decision. And I really chastise both sides. People who even before the announcement was made saying we need to confirm whoever the president puts up, and then people on the other side saying we can't confirm anybody the president puts up. Can we just not politicize the court and look at this the way the Constitution expects us to look at it? And to me, the extended investigation, the extended background check that the FBI is doing is another part of the record that needs to be reviewed before decisions are made.
Senator, thank you so much for the conversation today. Like I said earlier, times like this is why you make the big bucks. No doubt about it.
Carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgro Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
Thanks to NK Seeds for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your local NK retailer about adding a science-driven boost to your seed portfolio.